Certainly one of my favorite type interviews coming up. Jen Levin is a professor of physics and astronomy at Barnard College of Columbia University. Her scientific research concerns the early universe, chaos, and black holes. She holds a BA in physics and astronomy from Barnard College of Columbia University with a concentration in philosophy and a PhD from MIT in physics. She has worked at the Center for Particle Astrophysics at the University of California, Berkeley, before moving to the UK, where she worked at Cambridge University in the Department of Applied Mathematics and Theoretical Physics. Just before returning to New York, she was the first scientist in residence at the Ruskin School of Fine Art and Drawing at Oxford, with an award from the National Endowment for Science, Technology, and Arts. Truly a heavyweight, Dr. Jen Levin, coming up next. Dr. Levin, it is a pleasure to have you on the program. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
I'm surprised we've never had you before. I guess we just found you.
I'm glad to be on now.
Happy moment indeed. All right, so we're going to talk, I guess, a little bit about, actually a couple of things, but the universe. I'm very, very interested myself in whether or not it's finite or just, really gigantic beyond our wildest dreams. Which do you suppose?
Well, I've actually been very interested in the possibility that the universe is finite. We can't answer the question yet with observations, but it's something that we could conceivably answer sometime in the near future. It's sort of been an assumption that the universe was born instantaneously infinite, and it's one that I've never really liked. And we can make sense of a model where the universe is born in a Big Bang, and it's actually finite.
How could we hope to prove that?
Well, there are very distinct patterns that we would see in the universe if it's finite and not too big, which is to say that it's still small enough that light could travel all the way around the universe in the age of the universe. The universe is about 14 billion years old, a little less than that, and it would take light in the time that light has traveled in 14 billion years, light has traveled a certain distance, and
right.
You want the universe to be less than essentially 14 billion light years across, or twice that really, because you can look in each direction, and it's not clear that the universe is that small. We really don't have a sense for how big it should be, even if it is finite. Should it be hundreds of billions of light years across, or should it be less than that? That's very difficult to guess from our theories and our models. So it's possible the universe will be so big that we will never see, in a sense, all the way around the universe.
Doctor, would it be equally distant in all directions?
Well, it's a funny question. I think what we have to imagine, it's a good question because I think it raises the idea of what do we really mean by a finite universe. And if you think about what people used to project for the Earth before they realized that the Earth was finite, they used to imagine that maybe the Earth would go on forever and that it was flat. Or maybe if you traveled in a boat leaving the coast of Spain, you would eventually just sail off the edge of the Earth as though it had this edge.
Right.
And we're imagining something like the Earth in the sense that the real solution, the beautiful resolution, is that the Earth is finite, that if I leave Spain in a boat and I travel in a straight line and I keep traveling, maybe I have to walk on land for a little while and then I go on a boat again, but I just always go in as straight a line as possible, I'll find myself coming back to Spain again. So the Earth doesn't have an edge, nor is it infinite. It's kind of compact and connected and finite. And that's what we're imagining for the entire universe.
Okay, you subscribe, I would take it to the Big Bang thing?
Yes.
Okay, we all know about explosions. So coming back to what I asked you a moment ago, explosions, unless they're absolutely perfect, which the Big Bang might have been, would be a little different in different directions, probably, or maybe.
Yeah.
That's why I asked, in some areas, could it be further out than in other areas? Perhaps it's not a perfect circle.
Sure, perhaps it's not a perfect circle. So you can imagine, also on the Earth, you can imagine if you're at the North Pole, there's a short way to go around to come back to where you started, and there's a long way to go around and come back to where you started. And so it's possible that if I left in a rocket ship, if the universe were finite and I could do this, I could leave the Earth, leave the solar system, leave our Milky Way galaxy, travel in a straight line, travel maybe for 20 billion light years, and come back to where I started in one direction. And it's possible if I traveled in another direction, it might only take me 10 billion light years to get all the way around. And so in that sense, yes, the universe could be longer all the way around in one direction than in another.
And if you came... If it's finite and you came to the end, mm-hmm. where would you be? Would you just have a great nothingness in front of you, or some kind of impenetrable wall, or what?
Yes, exactly. And I think that's, again, I think that is just like the Earth. If you traveled forever, where I am now, I'm in New York City, leaving New York City, would I come back to New York City again? Or would I just hit some impenetrable wall? And the fact is that you would travel in an arc around the globe and come back to where you started. And so similarly in space, if you traveled forever in one direction, it's not that you would come to a wall or an edge of space or there's some big nothingness. It's that you would actually see the Milky Way approach you again in front of you. So it would be this very surprising experience. You would leave in a rocket, you think the Milky Way galaxy is receding behind you in a straight line behind you, and you travel for years and years and years, billions of years, and you find the Milky Way approaching you in front again. So it's as though the universe is connected, and it's connected in this three-dimensional way that's very difficult to visualize, but is mathematically sensible.
Is there mathematics to support that?
Yes. We know that mathematically it's absolutely possible to have a three-dimensional space that's connected, smoothly connected everywhere and finite, so that wherever I travel in any given direction, I will simply loop around the space. I can loop round and round the space. There is no edge. There's no big divide or wall or block. It's smoothly connected, and I never notice that I'm traveling round and round the space. And mathematically, there's an infinite number of possibilities that we could choose from to imagine making the universe finite. That is to say, there's an infinite number of shapes in some sense.
Wow. all of this is difficult to get your mind around. It seems to me that if you just... Well, of course, we know our Earth is a globe, right? We know it's round, essentially.
Yeah.
Not quite, but really round. So, yes, you do come back to where you started, but
that's right.
Projecting that to a universe is...
It's definitely a tough leap, because the Earth analogy fails, because... So the Earth is a two-dimensional surface, you know, surrounding kind
right.
of a volume, and so we're imagining it bent into three dimensions. We're imagining we're traveling around the surface, but we see it floating in three dimensions, and that's why we can visualize it. So this is a big leap. I'm asking you to imagine a three-dimensional surface, if you like, that's bent and connected, and yet you don't have a fourth dimension in your mind to imagine bending it into, nor do you need one mathematically. So it's really a visual challenge, and it's when it's exactly where your sort of visualizations start to break down, is trying to imagine, how do I connect this three-dimensional volume and visualize it? Well, you can't really visualize it completely, but you can do it mathematically and convince yourself that it's a perfectly sensible possibility.
Is the Big Bang the only thing that really makes sense in terms of how it all began?
Well, there's two ways to take that question. It's an important question. There was definitely something big that happened about 14 billion years ago. And the evidence is overwhelming that the universe is expanding today, and that it is expanding from a hot, early beginning. And it's very, very, it's nearly impossible. I've never seen a successful model that tried to match observations that we have of the cosmos that can get around what seems to be the fact that the universe had a very, very hot beginning and is today expanding. And if you run the movie of the universe backwards, if you imagine today all the galaxies in the cosmos are all expanding away from all of the other galaxies in the cosmos.
Right.
So it's actually the space between them that's stretching. It's really a deep concept. You know, it's really a huge success when Hubble first observed this in the
China. Is there a way to actually, as you just put it, run it all backwards and and know the point at which it began.
Right. In a sense, we're imagining the universe like a balloon with all the all the matter of the universe on that balloon, and it's the balloon that's stretching. So it's not like the Big Bang is not an explosion in space and time where, let's say, a star can blow up in space-time and it ejects material, and it's very clear where the origin of the explosion was. It was at the center of where the star used to exist, and you see all this material running away from that center. The Big Bang is a very, very different picture. You're imagining instead that the entire space-time itself is expanding so that it's as though space itself and time itself was created in the Big Bang. So it's really a deep concept.
So in your opinion then, no space, no time prior to that instant.
Right, no space, no time prior to that instant. Although that's the part that's foggy. So, you know, I can come back and talk about what happened exactly at that instant. But we know pretty well that a fraction of a second after what we're calling that instant, space was expanding very rapidly, and material was flying around in that space. So it's like a balloon blowing up as when the universe explodes, and all of the hot energy and matter in the cosmos is whirling around in that balloon. And we can that was even predicted before it was observed, and as a consequence of Einstein's theory of curved space-time. It's interesting also that Einstein didn't really want to believe it himself. He was so shocked by this conjecture that the universe was expanding and that it had a beginning, that he really resisted the idea. And it's really been borne out by observations. And Einstein absolutely capitulated. He realized that in fact, the universe was expanding and it did have a beginning. Now, exactly how that goes, that's a whole interesting story. Was it the first time the universe kind of banged, so to speak, or were there cycles? Are there other sort of plumes of bubbles out there that are expanding also, and all of this is stuff that we still think about.
And what do you think about it?
Well, I think that we don't have all the information on the table, so all we can do is list all the possibilities and take them seriously until there's more observations. And so I think we have to take seriously the possibility that this is not the first time this has happened, that maybe there were cycles where the universe collapsed and exploded out again, and maybe we're at one moment in a possibly infinite history of such cycles. It's possible also that if you imagine the whole cosmos is like a huge landscape, that our piece of it, our little patch of the universe, as huge as it seems to us, is really just a small bubble or a plume off of that larger landscape, and that there are many such plumes, like a ginger root, and that these are might as well be considered other universes because we can't really communicate with them. They're sort of in our past to some extent. It's kind of a megaverse. I think these are all possibilities.
Okay, does that go along with other dimensions? Are we starting to talk about the possibility of other dimensions?
Well, it's independent of other dimensions, but it does ask that question, which is, why is the universe three-dimensional? And we don't really, oddly enough, know an answer to that question. Why, when the universe was created, should it have three spatial dimensions? Why, when I specify my location in space, I need to say east, west, north, south, up and down? I need to name three possibilities for where I am in space. And why aren't there maybe more spatial dimensions, 4, 5, 6, maybe 10? And there are theories that try to move beyond Einstein's theory that require more dimensions to make sense. So they hint that maybe they're there and that we'll discover them one day. So it's possible even our own little universe has more dimensions. Do I believe that?
There are quite a few theoretical physicists who believe there are, up to 11 additional dimensions?
Sure, the number can pop around depending on, different theories. But there are a number of people who work very seriously on the possibility that the universe has extra dimensions. And I do also work on that possibility. I am curious. It's not that I believe it or don't believe it. It's that I think it's possible. And as long as I think it's possible, I think we have to investigate that possibility. And then we hope to make real hardcore observations that will determine one way or another whether or not they're actually there. And the only way to do that is if we understand them well enough that we know what kind of observations we could perform. So why is it, if the universe has more dimensions, that we can't see them? Why is it that we can't perceive them? And so we discuss the possibility that those dimensions are finite. So if you imagine you're a tiny creature living on a straw, you might be aware that there was a long direction, that you could move up and down this straw. But you might be less aware of the fact that it had a kind of curled up direction, the short direction of the straw, which is wound onto itself, which is curled onto itself. And that's kind of how we're imagining these extra dimensions. Maybe there are more dimensions, but they're curled up in some sense. And they're so small, literally small, that I can't stick my hand in that direction. And I just don't know it's there as a result.
So it could be right next to us and all around us, and we would not perceive it.
Exactly. So in the straw, that extra dimension, in some sense, is everywhere. It's everywhere, and yet if you're a creature of a certain size on that straw, you might never really know that extra dimension exists. You're only aware of moving up and down in the long direction. And so we move around freely in three dimensions. It seems like the universe is very big, at least in those directions, if not infinite. Even if it is finite, it's at least very, very big. We know that there are huge galaxies out there and clusters of galaxies, and as far as the eye can see, it looks like space stretches. But maybe in those extra directions, they're so tightly curled, and so again, they're finite, that we don't notice that they're there.
Going back again to the Big Bang, we're told that everything that is came from something that was originally smaller than a quark, which I'm not sure we can even really detect yet, and became all that is now. Is there anything that can explain this? Other than a maker, other than God?
Well, yes, and which isn't to say it's not. It is going to sound very abstract and fantastical, and yet it comes out of a very well-tested theory. If we look at the quantum theory, which studies or explains phenomena on the smallest scales, you mentioned quarks, and quantum theory explains the phenomena of really subatomic particles and how things behave at that very small scale. And you can also think of it as high energies. That theory seems to say that things aren't as solid in reality as you and I are accustomed to believing. So if I have what I say is the vacuum, really, I think it's totally empty space. And in a laboratory, let's say, I create a vacuum. There's nothing in it. In quantum mechanics, you would look at that differently. You would say that vacuum is full of the potential for things to exist. And occasionally, out of that kind of what you can imagine, a virtual sea of the potential for things to exist, something might really pop out, like an electron and a positron, might really pop into existence for a fraction of a second and then pop out again. And this is really something that is possible in quantum mechanics, that things pop into and out of existence on a very, very short time scale, on a time scale that's inverse to its energy. So if it requires a lot of energy to make it, it's going to exist for a shorter time before it disappears again. And
right.
So you have this idea that even if there was no universe, loosely speaking, that there would be the potential for the universe to exist. And that you can imagine out of this kind of quantum sea of possibility that there would be a fluctuation. The universe would spark for a second, pop into existence, and pop out again. And if you can ride that for a second, imagine a little bubble pops into existence, and you can inflate it fast enough so it doesn't pop out again, you could get the whole universe. It's not impossible. and yet, our model of the Big Bang is getting richer than that. But
okay, but if we popped into existence, is there enough energy to keep us here, or is there the possibility that we could pop out just as quickly? I'll tell you what, we're at a break point, Doctor. Hold your answer, but at the macro level, I guess it can happen. An electron just pops into existence, not enough energy, and it's gone. Well, we're big. We're a universe. Could we suddenly pop out? We will for a moment and be right back. In the world of physics, we've got a definite heavyweight with us. Her name is Dr. Jana Levin. We're talking about, well, actually how it all began and maybe how it might all end. We'll get back to her in a moment. Doctor, you said that in a vacuum, we could create a vacuum, and then suddenly an electron might pop into existence and pop out again, that there was not enough energy to keep it going. Could that happen to our entire universe? Could we just pop out?
Well, now we've survived that danger zone, but it could happen. Sure, that a universe is created and that it immediately pops out again, but it's very, very, very tiny and very high energy at that time. It's also possible that it sort of mines itself so that the energy of expansion is exactly balanced with the amount of material in the universe, and in a sense it won't cost much to have this epoch of kind of rapid inflation where it gets large enough that it escapes that danger zone where it becomes macroscopic and there's no chance of it popping out of existence again. But what could happen is the universe could expand for many billions of years and eventually reach a maximum size and recollapse again, in a sense under its own weight, and go back to what's now called the Big Crunch. So it's possible that in our future, we'll be running the movie backwards literally, that we'll, we'll sort of repeat the history of the cosmos. Galaxies will smash together and break apart. Atoms will smash together and break apart. Everything will get very hot again, back to that primordial soup, and it will crunch down and maybe bounce out again in another Big Bang.
Yikes. imagining a Big Crunch, what if such a thing began? I presume it would be a very, from our perspective, a very slow crunch, or what would we notice if that actually began?
Well, it's so far in our future that other terrible things would happen before then. Our star would run out of nuclear fuel, which is what's keeping it big and bright, and would eventually begin to dim, and we would lose this incredibly important source of heat on the planet, or after a little while the sun would puff out again and its outer atmosphere would go past the solar system and we'd be sort of vaporized in the process. All kinds of terrible things will happen in the history of our little local patch of the universe before presumably it recollapsed, if it ever does recollapse. Observations of the universe now make it look like that won't happen. As far as we can see, we can get a sense of how much matter and energy density there is in the universe and whether it's enough to pull the universe back in into a big crunch. And it doesn't look like there's enough. It looks like there's just a critical amount that the universe will expand ever more slowly and eventually sort of stop coast to zero expansion in the far future.
Is there a way, Doctor, to measure the rate of expansion and whether it's actually slowing?
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, it's getting faster.
So I've heard.
Which has been a big surprise. So this is what I mean about it doesn't matter what we believe ahead of time. We might have some models and some prejudice for how we think the universe is evolving, and then we make observations and we find out that it's a little different than that. And that's what's really exciting, I think, about this kind of science, is that we really can make observations. And we absolutely can measure the expansion of the universe. And in the past several years, it's one of the most major discoveries in cosmology that the expansion is not slowing down. It is getting faster. The universe seems to be accelerating.
Okay, but see, in a conventional explosion, you have a very high velocity in the beginning, and that velocity slows down very rapidly.
Right.
So what's wrong with this model? In other words, how could we be... Where's the energy that's causing it to go faster?
That's a perfect question. That's exactly what we ask. Where's the energy that's causing it to go faster? What could possibly cause the universe to expand faster and faster?
Right.
And there is something called dark energy. So if we look at all the material in the universe and all the energy in the universe, it has a certain behavior. And if I imagine how it would affect the universe's expansion, the universe will expand due to the presence of an average amount of energy and matter in it, but it will usually start to, the expansion will start to slow down. Dark energy is a form of energy that has a very peculiar behavior, which is that the bigger the space gets, the more of it I feel. Like a rubber band, imagine you pull a rubber band. The more you pull it, the stronger the pull of the rubber band in some sense,
right.
The more you feel it. So the way this happens is as the universe expands, it actually feels more energy, and that makes the universe expand faster. And then it feels more energy again, and that makes it expand faster.
But that's not like a rubber band.
Well, sorry, because it doesn't pull in resistance, but it is like a rubber band in that it gets stronger and stronger. The rubber band, probably, you're right, is not a good analogy.
It takes more force to pull it apart, that's for sure. But what I'm saying is I just can't imagine. That's my problem. I can't imagine all this.
Imagine. Well, it works like this. Usually, if I have a certain amount of energy in a box and I expand the box, usually you dilute the amount of energy you feel. And so the expansion gets a little weaker. And dark energy is a form of energy where when you expand the box, you actually feel more energy. In some sense, you're seeing more of it in the cosmos. And as you expand more, you feel more and more energy. And that causes the universe to expand faster and faster. And the only thing we know of that acts like that is something called a cosmological constant. We can invent different models that mimic this behavior, but the primary sort of field or form that does that is cosmological constant. And ironically, it was introduced by Einstein when he first heard that the universe was expanding as a prediction of his own theory. It was something he introduced to try to alter his theory so that it would predict a static universe. And it wasn't quite successful because the universe wanted, in the presence of this thing he invented, the cosmological constant, it wanted to expand faster and faster and faster. It wanted to accelerate. So Einstein dismissed this term, said it was his greatest blunder when he discovered that the universe was, in fact, expanding according to Hubble's observations. And yet today, because it seems as though it's impossible for Einstein to make a mistake, it seems that the universe is, in fact, acting under the force or the influence of a term like this, a cosmological constant, some constant energy presence that drives the universe to expand faster and faster and faster. And one way to think about it is it's as though there is energy in the vacuum. And we talked about quantum mechanically, how the vacuum could have the potential for things to exist. And that kind of potential to exist might have an energy associated with it. So if space gets bigger, I feel more of this vacuum energy. And the universe will want to expand even faster. And then I will feel even more of this vacuum energy, and it will want to expand even faster. Now, we don't know exactly what this dark energy is. It might be this energy of the vacuum that we're talking about, or it might be something else entirely. And theorists are scrambling to try to understand what it might be and figure out a way to make an observation to determine what is this mysterious form of dark energy out there.
We certainly could use some new source of energy. So if they can figure it out, maybe they can tap it and we can use it. Who knows?
But who knows?
But this is some sort of energy that is virtually everywhere around us, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody measured it, actually measured it?
Well, we can't seem to measure it directly. And it's very difficult to think of a way to measure it directly. The best way to measure it is to look at the universe, because the universe responds to this vacuum energy in a way that most other things don't. So in a way, we are measuring it by measuring the expansion of the universe. Now, it's possible that we'll find out that there's some other explanation going on, and people are also busy trying to understand if there's another explanation, if maybe there isn't any dark energy. But the best way really to measure it is by looking at the expansion of the universe. So it's been
what about gravity?
Sorry?
What about gravity? Is that in the equation anywhere here?
It is absolutely in the equation, because the way we understand how the universe evolves is by studying gravity. And Einstein taught us that gravity is really a theory of a curved space-time. And to understand gravity, we have to understand how space-time is responding to energy and matter. So it's exactly by including gravity that you get this relationship between the expansion and the matter content and the energy content of the cosmos. So it's possible that maybe Einstein's theory isn't really 100% right, that we're seeing a modification of this theory on some scale, and that if we modified gravity, we might not need to have a dark energy to explain what we're observing. So these are all things that people are trying to investigate.
Is it possible that gravity travels through dimensions?
Well, in a sense, the theory of gravity would be, if there are extra dimensions, it would be part of the theory of gravity. So let's say Einstein had his theory of gravity, the general theory of relativity, and he wrote it down for three spatial dimensions and one time dimension. It was noticed very quickly that there was no reason for it to be three spatial dimensions and one time dimension, that you could generalize this theory of gravity to an arbitrary number of dimensions. And so when we ask about extra dimensions, we're asking about them in some sense gravitationally. We're studying them as a space-time in the same sense that Einstein taught us to think of a space-time. So extra dimensions are very tightly bound to our understanding of gravity.
I was always taught that gravity was just a function of mass.
Yes, that's what we were all taught, and that's the Newtonian idea.
Right. And there's more to it?
There's more to it, because Einstein realized that energy also creates a gravitational field around it. So that's exactly right. We would think that energy doesn't really create gravity, only big, massive stuff, the
right.
Earth, the sun. These are things that are massive enough that we notice their gravitational attraction, the
right.
center of the galaxy. And what Einstein realized also, it's a sort of simple consequence of E equals mc squared, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, that that gravity feels all forms of energy and matter, that they're interchangeable. And so if I just have a lot of energy out there, even though it's not in the form of what we usually think of as mass, I can create a gravitational field. And it might not be attractive in the normal sense that we think of as, you know, falling onto stars, being drawn towards the Earth, circling around the center of the galaxy. So right now, our entire solar system is spiraling around the center of our Milky Way galaxy, and our galaxy is falling towards a cluster of galaxies. But we see that it can cause, in this case, a kind of repulsion in the sense that space-time stretches in the presence of certain energy.
So gravity could be part of the equation that's causing this expansion we don't fully understand?
That's right. If Einstein's theory of gravity is exactly right, then there really seems to be a dark energy. And so we really have to understand the energy balance between gravity, matter, and energy to understand exactly what's going on in the cosmos. If Einstein's theory needs some modification, maybe it's not the whole story, maybe there are things that are going on there and we have to look beyond Einstein, then it would modify our conclusions about whether or not there exists a dark energy.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the quantum world for a second.
Sure.
It's my understanding that in the quantum world, particle A in New York and particle B in Hong Kong can be observed to do movements that appear to be coordinated exactly. And yet there is no measurable communication between particle A and particle B, and still they do this dance that's predictable, A and B.
Mm.
Right? Is that correct?
Yes, you can entangle particles, is the way of saying it, and then separate them and measure what's going on with one particle, and you will somehow instantaneously know what's going on with the other particle.
Yes.
Quantum mechanics is strange, and a lot of people resist it,
including
Einstein.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What did he say? Strange, spooky action or something at a distance?
Spooky action at a distance. And it was action at a distance that led Einstein to overthrow Newton. Newton's theory of gravity was phenomenally successful. There was very, very little reason to suspect there was something beyond Newton's theory of gravity. But what Einstein didn't like about it was that if an apple falls from a tree under the gravitational pull of the Earth, it seems that there's action at a distance, that the Earth is pulling the apple without touching it. That even though the Earth could be meters away from this apple, that somehow the apple's being pulled, and he thought this was spooky action at a distance. So Einstein's theory is so beautiful because it does away with that. What he said is we should think instead of gravity as curves in space, and that the Earth, what it's doing really is causing a curve or a bend in the fabric of space-time. And all the apple is doing when it falls is it's following that natural curve. So there's no longer a spooky action at a distance. The curve was created when the Earth formed into a ball, the curve sort of shaped around it, and then the apple falls the natural curve, like a ping pong falling around the curve on a canopy bed if there's a bowling ball in it. And so he had this huge leaps precisely by not believing in action at a distance. So it was kind of hard for him to have to accept it again in the form of quantum theory.
Well, I don't understand. There has to be some kind of communication that's occurring between these particles. There has to be, doesn't there?
Yes. Well, this isn't a fully understood situation. Quantum mechanics really, really challenges the intuition, and I think nobody would believe it if it weren't for the fact that it's incredibly successful, which means if I use quantum theory and I put aside the fact that I don't completely understand what's happening, that it doesn't seem physically possible to me, or it violates all my intuitions about reality and action at distance and what's right and what's possible, and I just use quantum mechanics to calculate things and make predictions, and then I go to an accelerator or a laboratory and I smash particles together and I test those predictions, it is confirmed to remarkable accuracy, greater than any theory we have.
Completely repeatable,
so
right?
Sorry?
Completely repeatable, in other
completely
words.
Completely repeatable. It matches experiments to stunning, stunning accuracy. And I think that is why physicists have had to accept something they do not fully understand. And so it's really an important issue to try to understand quantum mechanics, and it's definitely still being talked about.
Boy, there's something big there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is definitely something big there, and there's going to be something big in the unification of quantum theory with Einstein's theory of gravity, because those two things we can't seem to, at least in our pen and paper, make a mesh. They really don't seem to go together. And yet we know that very early in the universe's history, things must have been behaving quantum mechanically, because it was very high energies. We're probing really microscopic physics, particle physics, and it's also a theory of gravity, because we're talking about the behavior of all of space-time and all the curves in space-time in response to this quantum phenomena. And yet we really, that whole picture of what happens when those two scales sort of compete is very foggy. And that's sort of the great hope, is that we'll have a way of understanding the universe when we understand how quantum mechanics and Einstein's theory of gravity go together.
Who is doing the major work in this area now in trying to understand this?
Oh, there's many people working from many different directions. There's a huge pull with a theory called string theory, where you imagine that if you look at fundamental particles, that if you look very, very closely at these fundamental particles, you find out they're not point particles. Maybe if I look very, very closely at an electron, it's not really a dot. It's really a little loop of string. And what makes it an electron is, in a sense, the note it's playing on that little loop of string. And if I look at all of the matter in the universe, they'd all be the same little loops of string playing different notes. It's a beautiful idea. And that gravity would be, in a sense, another note played on that string. So that's a very popular theory. It's also very, very complicated, very difficult to understand. There's lots of really quite talented people working on that. And then there are other branches of quantum gravity, more canonical approaches they're called, where they don't ask about strings and that kind of unification, but they ask about how to make space-time itself look quantum mechanical. So there's lots of groups around the world that have been working on this for the past, 80 years.
Have you thought at all about travel in time? It's one of my favorite topics. We're at the top of the hour, Doctor, so hold tight. When we come back, we will ask about time travel. My guest is Dr. Jana Levin. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.